New face. My name's Francis, and I'm co-vicar here with my lovely wife, Barbara. Well, first of all, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Let me indulge. This keeps my voice going. Well, I see we're of all ages here, some of us quite young, and others have done a few laps. And I suspect some of us, well, church is like home. It's we spend a lot of our life there, and others maybe it's a place we visit every now and then. So I want to ask the question, why Christmas? But not like typically the journalists and the media people do in the week before, you know, bowling up to people in George Street and saying, well, what's Christmas to you? And then getting a few paragraphs for the ODT or something like that. But why Christmas? Why? Question that's not asked enough in our crazy world. And I want to take it from a perspective that you probably wouldn't assume. Take it from God's perspective. So don't get carried away with this, but could you just try and think you're God for a few minutes? Okay, it won't get scary. Why Christmas? What would God's answer be if the ODT bailed him up somewhere and said, excuse me, Almighty, why Christmas? Can you tell us in a paragraph or two for tomorrow's newspaper? So let's climb into God's frame. And we can do this because God has let us know what his frame is. So you've poured yourself into the great project, creation, over a very long time. Scientists think about 13.6 billion years. But as you invented time, that's not really a problem. It's a big issue for us. The amazing thing that the whole point of this creation project was to create entities that could be your friends. Yes, God went into creation in part to look for friends. Now we understand that, don't we? The creator is looking for friends, which sounds a bit like the story of Geppetto and Pinocchio. Does that come to mind? The woodcarver, the little wooden puppet, comes to life. Creation and friendship. So you create something we call the universe, and it's full of stars and black holes and planets and other cosmic features as a context for those special entities that could be your friends. It could even be your children to enjoy and receive your love. Now, what I'm painting so far is the Judeo-Christian backstory. It's the backstory. It's the story underneath the story. It's God's plan A. And it was a very good plan, but it had one little vulnerable twist, one little area where it could go pear-shaped. What if the children or the people made to be friends to share his love and to reflect his glory, what if they rebelled? What if they did something like that? As children are what to do, aren't they? Are they? Children of all ages? What if the relationship God offered was rejected and God was ignored? Well, thank you, God. That's been very nice. We'll just get on with it ourselves now. Thank you very much. Nice creation, by the way. Love the sunsets. Really pretty. Well, this is the backstory, and sadly, that's what happened. Genesis chapter 3 tells the story where it starts, and then through the Bible, it continues. And you pick up the newspaper, and it's still happening. It's an ongoing thing. We call it the fall. So wherever God is ignored or denied, the consequence, though, is that humanity becomes a bit less diminished. We become less glorious, less of what we were made to be, less and fall short of what we could be. It's the most basic human dynamic. It's the backstory. So you're still walking in God's shoes. I'm sort of painting the picture of how God views things and why Christmas. Now, assuming that God looks at this with a broken heart and doesn't give up. Because one option would be to say, well, that universe didn't work out. Let's try another one. The way you do with a cake that doesn't work out. Or something like that. Could have done that. The longed for children made for glory among all the life forms of creation are running amok with disastrous consequences. What might the rescue plan be now? What if instead of saying, well, I'll give up on that, it didn't work out, it's a bad cake, how could this be redeemed? How could it be rescued? How could it be put right? Remember, you're thinking as God. What are your options? In 2021, we tend to blame COVID for being the big disruption in the world. It's the spoiler, isn't it? 2020 was the year that didn't happen for many people. 2021 is the kind of year that, I don't know, didn't happen much either, did it? But the basic, the deeper real issue is not COVID and what the government's, how the government's responding to it, or how the supply chains are ruined, or the events that didn't happen. The big issue is still this picture I've painted of the children running amok, of those intended to be God's friends missing it. And all that flows out of that. So, still thinking as God now, what might our options be for this sad situation? So I'm going to run through a few, and we're going to sort of evaluate, maybe. Here's the first one. We have some school teachers here, university lecturers. Okay. Information and education. Information and education. What if we could get all the useful information to everyone, and give everyone an education, and that would make the difference? Because if you know, then you won't do silly things, will you? Yeah, nah. Doesn't work that way, does it? What if we tell people about dangerous, destructive practices? They'll stop, won't they? And what if you tell people what makes for a long and satisfying life? They'll go for it. Yes? Worth a try? Could be a game changer. Actually, God's already done that. The prophets tried that in what we call the Old Testament. The book of Proverbs, the law, a wealth of information about how to live long and well and prosper. Didn't work. What's more, there's great resources available in most languages around the world in a book called the Bible. It's there, black on white. But information doesn't do it, does it? Not by itself. So let's take another option. And I know this is really popular with a lot of people. Science and technology. That'll sort it out. Once upon a time, until about 40 years ago, who can remember 40 years ago? So last century, I know, but it was there. I remember, about 1981. Many people believed that science and technology would make everything better. We had this thing going called the myth of progress. And then around the late 70s, many of us began to wonder if the nuclear umbrella was really such a good thing. What, we can blow the planet up 6 times? And all that would be left of us is a little carbon layer around the planet forever. Were science and technology really the engines of progress, really making us, people, God's children, better? And the questioning started. It's still going. I enjoy my digital tools and my toys too, but do they make us any more human? So it seemed as if science, wonderful as it is, tells us more and more about less and less, to the point where we know enough to know that we don't know much at all. But it doesn't really change us. It doesn't shift this, does it? Puts more up here and here. But that whole business of God's children running amok, it just amplifies. It's two sides of a coin, progress and problem. So, other options. Come on, we're trying to rescue the human race here, trying to put God's children back. What about prosperity and wealth? Also about 40 years, a Chinese leader, Deng Xiaoping, just comes to mind, who said, being wealthy is glorious. Do I quote it correctly, Kathy? Yes, being wealthy is glorious. Let's be wealthy. And you see where that is taking China, because that'll change us all. A big boost in financial resource. Now, if I talk much more about this, this could get political very quickly. I don't want to do that. What do you do? Do you generate the wealth or do you share it? Or somewhere in the middle? What if we all had enough and some more? Wouldn't the world be a better place? Wouldn't people be better people? Mavis, double your bank account tomorrow. Would you be twice the Mavis you are today? We could all be, imagine like living in nations like Saudi Arabia or Norway with more oil wealth than they know what to do with. But are they better people? Are they realizing more what it is to be God's children? I don't think so. So God might say, I've already given you so much. The earth abounds with riches. Do you need more? Really? Okay. You know what might help? This is the fourth option. A really good religion. I mean, with a good religion, the Egyptians could build the pyramids, eh? All you need is manpower and a good religion, and you can do anything in the ancient world. If people had a good religion with good values, lots of beautiful songs and spectacular festivals and warm traditions with deep spirituality, things might improve. We might think so, but apparently God doesn't like religion. Really doesn't like it. Makes that very clear through his prophets. He saved some of his hardest language, especially through Jesus, for religious people. Don't give God religion. And does it really change people? Well, God doesn't think so. But good old religion still has a following. I'm going through the options. Information, science and technology, prosperity and wealth, religion. What could, from God's point of view, what program, what policy, what could he roll out or give to bring the children home? What's actually ticking at the moment in our culture has a fancy Greek word, Epicureanism. It's the philosophy, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. In other words, squeeze life for all the happiness you can get and all the joy. And that's good. And then you're fully alive. Then you're glorious. But there's a darker version of that, very strong among us today as well, nihilism. Nothing actually matters, really. So, boah. you might as well just enjoy what you can and get on with it. See, a wonderful part of the gospel is that God does not need our suggestions. I always have to remind myself, God has a bigger imagination than me. And the word holy is a way of saying to us, he just thinks differently. He's on a different plane. He's approaching everything in a way that we would never in a thousand years imagine. So we might have the insight to realize and recognize that things aren't as they should be. And the report card does not read, humanity, 2021, fully alive, glorious, shining. So if God's not taking suggestions from us, what might his proposal be? Remember, you're thinking in God's shoes now. What are the options? An unknown writer wrote a letter to the Hebrews in the New Testament, and it begins by spelling it out this way. This is Hebrews chapter 1. Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom he also created the world. He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature. And he upholds the universe by his word of power. There's a clue. God's amazing idea for addressing the human condition was to become human. He resolved to do that in the usual way, through a womb and a birth canal. Wow, that's different. So what's God's strategy in doing this? How does simply becoming part of the affected population contribute to the improvement? John put it this way in words that we hear every Christmas. We heard last night in the nine lessons and carols. This is from John chapter 1, verse 1. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. So God's strategy, get in among it. Get up close and personal. Drink the same water. Breathe the same air. Hug, kiss, share meals, have parties. Do all the human thing. And infect it with this light. This wonderful light that comes from beyond, that humanity can't generate for itself. And as people receive that light, that presence, something will change. The poetic metaphor light means so much. It's the true software we need to run humanity 1.0. No bugs, no crashes. It's the revelation of truth that makes sense of everything else, the key that unlocks. The Greek word in John's gospel there is logos, related to our English word logic. It's the rhyme and reason of reality. Light. It's the safety of light to reach out to God in the knowledge that he's good. Mavis, if I meet you in a dark alley, I don't know if you're good or not. I need light. It's what makes true relationships possible. If we want to know each other, we look each other in the eye, don't we? We want to see the light in each other's soul. And yet the strangest thing happens when light comes in this world. Many people say, don't want it. Because it is challenging. It is. It can be uncomfortable. Many people prefer it dark. And if not dark, well, a little bit shady. A little bit of fudge. A little bit of wiggle room. Light means change as reality is seen and experienced. But for those who recognize the light of God, the one who came as God among us, that light has transforming power in many ways. Because true light not only illuminates the way a burning candle makes itself visible, or an iPhone illuminates its own text. True light illuminates everything else. And results in an enlightenment that transforms lives, societies, nations, and more. It has happened many times. So when we look at Jesus Christ, we look at him as the light of the world. We will see ourselves, we'll see each other, we'll see the world, we'll see everything in a different light than what we do now. And what the light reveals can be sweet or not so sweet. And that sets up the Christian way. What do you do about that? Now that you see, what do you do? You know, that's the country has just had an inquiry into abuse in government and faith institutions. And so often it gets to a point where someone knows, but what did I do with it? What did I do with that knowledge? And sadly, it has not always been right. That's the crisis that comes when something is lit up. What do you do? Do you bury it next, or do you follow through in a good way? So that is how we are empowered to be reconciled and realize as never before our calling as children of God. That was God's option. Get in among it and infect it with this light that overcomes the problems, the break in relationship. So that's what we're celebrating, I suggest, the coming of God in the usual human way to bring light to the people in darkness. It's the light that must first shine in the heart, in the mind. And from there, it can shine out into the dark corners of the world. This is God's outreach. This is his initiative, coming in person and presenting himself as light to those who would receive him. And when that light shines through education, through science, through technology, through the economy, through our finances, great transformation is possible. But it starts here. Let's pray.